She doesn't want your man. She wants his bank account, his secrets, and the silence he buys after cheating on you with her. Welcome to the Side Bitch Manifesto, a savage, unapologetic journey told by the woman your mother warned you about. From manipulating millionaires to destroying a senator's legacy, she teaches women how to weaponize beauty, bury emotions, and turn every good wife's worst nightmare into a six-figure empire. This isn't love. This is war, with heels, lip gloss, and zero regrets. Ready to meet the villain? She's already inside his phone. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Side Bitch Manifesto. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. Welcome to the game, bitch. You ever look a man dead in the eye while he's sitting next to his wife, kissing her on the cheek, and think, damn, I had that man's soul in my mouth last night? No. Well then, welcome to my world, baby. And buckle the fuck up. I'm not here to be your role model. I'm not interested in your judgments, your Bible verses, or your cries about loyalty and love. I'm here to tell the truth, my truth. And that truth is real, raw, and soaked in perfume, cum, and control. They call me a homewrecker. I call myself an opportunist. A strategist. A bitch who gets what she wants. And what I want is everything. I wasn't always like this. Nah. I was raised on the fairy tales, too. Daddy left early. Mommy cried a lot. Love looked like pain and sounded like apologies too late to mean shit. I learned young that if you ain't the one breaking hearts, you're the one picking up the pieces, bleeding fingers and all. By 18, I was done playing nice. I watched too many women give their youth, their bodies, their sanity to men who barely knew how to zip up their pants after cheating. I said fuck that. If the game was gonna get played, then I was gonna run it. Let me tell you about the first married man I ever fucked, properly fucked. Not just sex, but mind fucked. Soul-snatching shit. His name was Malik. 6'2", beard so sharp it could cut glass, money like rain in the tropics. Drove a black Range, wore tailored suits like his body was carved for them. CEO of some fintech company. I didn't give a damn about his LinkedIn. I just knew he had a weakness, and I knew how to find it. He came into the lounge one Friday night, trying to play it cool, like he wasn't already scanning the room for something to distract him from the wife at home, who probably stopped swallowing his dick 2 anniversaries ago. I caught his eye from across the room. Didn't smile. Didn't wave. Just stared. It was a stare that said, "You can't afford me, but I'm still gonna take your everything." Malik walked over. Of course he did. These men always do. He smelled like money, secrets, and disappointment. I let him talk. They always love to talk. Talk about stress. Talk about how different I seem. Talk about how his wife doesn't understand him, doesn't support him, doesn't fuck him like she used to. I didn't give a damn about his story. What I cared about was the watch on his wrist, the card in his pocket, and the hunger in his eyes. See, when men cheat, they don't just want sex. They want to feel powerful again. Important. Desired. And I know exactly how to feed that lie. I leaned in, placed my hand on his thigh, and whispered, "Let me be your secret." That's all it took. That night, he booked me a suite. I made sure it was under my name. I always keep receipts. Always. I wore red lace, heels that clicked like a countdown to sin, and lip gloss that made his knees buckle. When he walked in, he tried to act in control. Tried to play daddy. But I flipped that shit so fast, he was begging with his eyes before I even touched him. I undressed slowly, deliberately. The art of anticipation is how you make a man forget about his kids, his wife, his wedding ring still sitting snug on his finger. He came undone like a confession in church. And after? That's where the real power begins. I didn't just ghost him. Oh no, I left a trail. A subtle scent on his collar. A single bobby pin on the nightstand. A text the next morning. "Thanks for the stretch and the secrets, lover." He called me 3 hours later. I let it ring. He texted. I left him on read. By the end of the week, he'd sent me flowers, money, and a hotel key card with his name on the reservation. That's how you flip the script. You don't chase, you haunt. That was the beginning. The moment I realized I could live outside the rules. Fuck the system. Fuck the fairy tales. I didn't want to be someone's wife, ironing shirts and pretending to sleep when he comes home late. I wanted to be the reason he came home smelling like guilt. I wanted to be the whisper in the back of her mind when she's doing laundry and finds receipts for dinners she never ate. You know what they never tell you? The side bitch is always the one with the upper hand. She's not drowning in expectations. She's not tied to his legacy. She's not sitting at home cooking meals for a man who's texting me under the table. The side bitch gets the money, the orgasms, the power, and none of the baggage. But make no mistake, this game ain't for the soft. You can't cry over a man who'll walk back to his wife the moment you show weakness. You gotta know your worth, tax it, and never apologize for cashing in. I got a system now. Rules. Techniques. Psychological warfare dressed in heels and scented like Chanel. I don't sleep with married men just to get laid. I sleep with them to own them, to extract resources, to feed off their egos while they think they're feeding me. It's an art form, and I'm a fucking Picasso. You think I feel bad for the wives? Let me tell you something. If your man was truly happy, if he was truly loyal, he wouldn't be in my DMs talking about how he wants to be seen, touched, heard. That's not my fault. That's her failure. I'm not wrecking homes. I'm just collecting the salvage. So, if you came here looking for apologies, turn your ass around. If you came here to judge, fuck you and the fake morals you rode in on. But if you came to learn, to understand the power of feminine manipulation, if you came to take your life back and get paid doing it, then baby, you're in the right place. This is the Side Bitch Manifesto. And I'm about to teach you how to be the storm they never saw coming. Chapter 2. The Rules of Engagement. Let me get one thing clear before we go any further. This ain't just a lifestyle. This is a fucking profession. Being the side bitch isn't about throwing on some heels and waiting for a married man to get bored. No, it's about strategy, timing, calculated silence, emotional chess. It's about knowing exactly when to laugh, when to cry, and when to slide his credit card out of his wallet while he's still inside you, moaning your name like a little bitch. You want to win. You play smart. And I don't mean smart like getting good grades or reading self-help books. I mean predator smart. You study the field. You identify the weaknesses. You strike when the ego is at its peak and the conscience is at its lowest. You never fall in love, and you always walk away richer than you entered. This is where the rules come in. I didn't get this far without structure, without a code, without a set of commandments that keep the game clean and the rewards consistent. And I didn't write these rules from a place of theory. I wrote them from hotel rooms, from aftercare showers with married men crying on my chest, from blocked numbers and wire transfers that hit my account like orgasms. Every rule I have cost me something to learn. So pay attention, because this is where girls become women and side bitches become legends. Rule 1, never chase. Ever. Men are hunters. And no matter how evolved they pretend to be, their dicks are still primal. The moment you chase, you lose value. You become accessible, predictable, replaceable. You let them come to you, always. Even if it's obvious you want them, you let them make the first move. You let them think it was their idea. That illusion of control? That's how you own them. Because when a man thinks he's chasing you, he doesn't realize he's walking right into a trap. Rule 2, find the weakness, exploit it. Every married man has a crack in his armor. It could be a nagging wife, a sexless bed, daddy issues, a need to feel powerful. Your job is to sniff it out like blood in the water. Listen, really fucking listen. Not because you care, but because every complaint is a map to his insecurities. And insecurities? Those are your entry points, your pressure buttons, your ATM passwords. Let me give you an example. There was this guy, Antoine, married, 3 kids, head of some investment firm in the city, always in control, or so he thought. He told me his wife stopped dressing up for him. Said she wore sweatpants and messy buns even when they went out. You know what I did? I showed up every time in silk, with lashes like wings and heels like knives. I looked like temptation wrapped in sex and dipped in sin. He melted in my hands within a week. Told me I made him feel seen. Bitch, I didn't see him. I saw his bank statements. But I nodded and played along, and when he said he wanted to feel desired, I whispered, "You deserve to be worshipped." 2 Rolexes and a down payment on my apartment later, I agreed. Rule 3, stay emotionally detached. This one's the hardest. Because the minute a man starts texting good morning, remembering your favorite food, or crying in your arms like you're his therapist/mistress/mother, your dumb little heart starts wanting to believe the bullshit. Don't. You can sip the fantasy, but don't swallow it. Love is not the goal. Control is. You want to know the first time I broke this rule? His name was James. Navy veteran. Older. Salt and pepper beard. Deep voice that made my spine tingle. And the sex. Phew. That man had me thinking about breakfast in bed and matching pajamas. For a minute, I forgot who I was. I started catching feelings. Started answering texts too fast. Let him see me cry once. Big fucking mistake. Because the moment you let a man know you need him, the balance shifts. He becomes the sun, and you become a planet begging for orbit. James left me with nothing but a weak-ass apology and an overdraft account. Never again. Now I keep a spreadsheet. Literally. Names, birthdays, trigger words, favorite wine, what their wives do for a living, what kind of porn they like, what trauma makes them tick. And right beside it, a column that reminds me of the limit. You can fuck their bodies, control their minds, but never, ever, give them your heart. Rule 4. Keep it quiet, keep it clean. The loudest side bitches get replaced. The quiet ones? We get rewarded. You don't post. You don't tag. You don't even hint. You don't pick fights with the wife on Instagram. You stay in the shadows like a velvet ghost. That's how you get the long-term benefits. Trips. Cars. Credit cards with your name on them, and a man begging you to use them. Because the moment he feels safe, he opens up. And when he opens up, he pays. You ever wonder why some mistresses get cut off after 2 months and others last 2 years? Silence, baby. I once had a guy buy me a condo in another state, just so he could fly in and relax. You think that came from being messy? No. That came from knowing how to bite my tongue and play the role of peace while his wife played the role of chaos. Silence is the currency of the side bitch. Rule 5, exit strategically. Don't wait until he ghosts you. Don't wait until the wife finds out. Leave on a high note. Always leave with more than you came in with. Always leave before the spark dims and he starts questioning the money he's spending. I usually plant the idea in his head, make it look like I'm the one who needs space, or that I've caught feelings and don't want to ruin what we have. That makes him miss me. Miss me so much that when I finally circle back, if I ever do, the price has doubled. One time I left a married judge, took his watch, his weekend house key, and the memory of me riding him in his courtroom chair. He still emails me from fake accounts begging for a taste, but he can't afford it anymore. I've leveled up. His guilt made me rich. Rule 6, never fuck for free. I don't care how fine he is. I don't care how good the dick is. I don't care if he makes you laugh and moan in the same breath. If you're fucking a married man for love, you're volunteering for emotional bankruptcy. This is not romance. This is war. And in war, you take trophies. Let the wife fuck him for free. Let her deal with the snoring, the bills, the ungrateful in-laws. You collect the gifts, the rent, the trips, the hush money. You turn your time into transactions, your presence into profit. You are not a girlfriend. You are the prize, the escape, the fantasy. Charge accordingly. I live by these rules like scripture. Because the second you slip, the second you forget who you are, this game will eat you alive. And trust me, baby, I didn't claw my way to the top of this pyramid to come tumbling down because of some weak-ass dick and broken promises. You want to win this game? You better learn the rules, tattoo them on your soul, and smile while you break every expectation they ever had about what a woman should be. Because in my world, a side bitch ain't second. She's running the whole fucking show. Welcome to class. Chapter 3. Wife ain't the problem. You want to know the biggest lie women tell themselves? It's the side chick's fault. Baby, no the fuck it ain't. The only person breaking up your happy little home is the man you swear you know. The man you cook for. Sleep next to. Share bills with. He's the demolition crew. I'm just the bitch walking in through the hole he already blew open. Let me tell you something real. And you better listen good. I don't chase husbands. I don't scroll through marriage registries hunting for rings. These men, they find me. They come crawling, limping even, bleeding from emotional wounds their wives couldn't even see because they were too busy playing the role of good woman, instead of noticing they were becoming furniture in their own homes. Wanna blame somebody? Blame the man you married. The one who called me the moment you turned your back. The one who said you haven't sucked his dick since the second baby. The one who swore he loved you but left our hotel room smelling like regret and guilt, and still came back the next week. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's talk about wives. Because I hear it all the time. You're a homewrecker. You're a slut. You're a disgusting whore who ruins families. And to that I say, sweetheart, I can't ruin what's already rotting from the inside. Most of these marriages are corpses with a fresh coat of Instagram paint. Matching outfits, fake smiles, forced family vacations. They'll post my king and my queen captions while sleeping in separate rooms and cheating through burner phones. I've seen it too many times. I've fucked it too many times. Let me tell you about Rachel. Rachel was one of those wives who swore her husband would never cheat. Oh, she was proud. Prissy had that fake Christian humility the kind that only shows up on holidays and when other women get too close to her man. She'd throw shade, post couple goals, and smile like she hadn't cried herself to sleep just last week. Her husband, Marcus? Fine. Dark chocolate with a silver tongue and a thick wallet. CEO of a local tech company. Polished. Quiet. Dangerous. The kind of man who could look at you once and make your panties wet and your morals blurry. The first time he saw me was at a business event. Rachel right there on his arm in a dress two sizes too tight and a fake-ass smile plastered across her face like everything was perfect. She didn't know me, of course, but she knew what I was. I saw it in her eyes the second she clocked me. The discomfort. The panic. That sixth sense women have when another bitch walks in the room knowing exactly how to fuck your whole life up. I didn't even speak to Marcus that night. I didn't have to. I let my perfume do the talking. My stare do the cutting. I moved through that ballroom like smoke. And he watched every step. 3 days later, he messaged me. No hello. No intro. Just, I need to see you again. Alone. I smiled. Replied. You're married. He sent back. So are my regrets. Phew. These men are fucking poets when they're horny and unhappy. Our first rendezvous? A rooftop bar, 10 p.m., after his wife fell asleep thinking he had a late-night meeting. That night, he poured his heart out between drinks and thigh squeezes. Told me about the silence at home. The way Rachel criticized everything he did. How she turned into a mother figure instead of a lover. How he hadn't been wanted in years, only managed, scheduled, and blamed. I didn't say much. Just nodded. Listened. I touched his hand when he got emotional. Brushed his knee under the table. Made him feel like a man again. That's the secret most wives forget. Men don't leave for sex. They leave for significance. We fucked that night in the back seat of his car like teenagers in heat. It wasn't even about the orgasm, it was about the power shift. He had something he wasn't supposed to have. And me. I had the one thing Rachel thought she owned. For months, I became the storm his wife couldn't name. She knew something was wrong. She could feel the shift. But she couldn't prove it. That's the beauty of playing my position. I'm the ghost between their arguments. I'm the reason he won't touch her. I'm the whisper behind the late night showers. I'm the lipstick stain that disappears before sunrise. Eventually, she broke down and messaged me. A long-ass paragraph full of desperation, rage, and accusations. You ruined my marriage. You're disgusting. I hope karma finds you. I laughed. Karma was me. I replied with one sentence. If I ruined it, it was never real. She blocked me immediately. That's the part these wives never want to admit, that maybe their forever was built on routines, fear, and dependency, not love. That maybe their husbands were already gone emotionally, and I just gave them a reason to physically leave. I don't pity wives. I don't hate them either. I just don't respect the delusion. Stop blaming the woman who took what you ignored. Stop preaching about loyalty when your man is cash-apping me for silence. Stop attacking the side bitch when it's your husband who gave her the key. And let me say this loud for the bitter bitches in the back. I don't want your man. I want what your man can give me. His mind. His money. His secrets. I'm not trying to marry him. I'm trying to profit from him. I don't care about building a life with him. I care about building a lifestyle with the shit he gives me behind your back. You play wife. You play therapist. You play babysitter and maid and emotional sponge. Me. I play fantasy. And the fantasy always wins. So to all the wives out there trying to come for me, trying to threaten me, trying to shame me, save it. Keep your ring. Keep your vows. Keep pretending your man's phone died while he was balls deep in my mouth at the Four Seasons. I'll keep the hotel key and the envelope full of hush money. Because the truth is, I'm not your enemy. Your husband is. Chapter 4, Side Bitch to Sugar Boss. I didn't wake up one day and decide I wanted to be rich off married dick. It was a process. An evolution. A spiritual awakening through orgasms, wire transfers, and ruined pillowcases. I didn't just fuck their husbands. I fucked their bank accounts, their egos, their sense of control. And when I came up for air, I realized I had something way more valuable than sex. Leverage. Leverage, baby, is the currency most women never learn how to spend. We give it away for love, waste it on men who don't remember our birthdays, trade it for validation like it's clearance jewelry. But me. I learned early that my power didn't just live between my thighs. It lived in my silence, my smile, my exit strategy, and my influence. I wasn't just a side chick anymore. I was a brand. Let me walk you through it. There was a night around 2 a.m. When I laid in bed next to this millionaire real estate exec, his chest still rising slow from a nut that nearly took his soul. His phone buzzed on the nightstand. Wife's name. I watched it light up and fade out. Buzz. Light. Fade. Again and again. He didn't flinch. She was probably home, breastfeeding, worrying about him, praying he'd come back home one day and be the man she married. Meanwhile, he was snoring in my sheets, smelling like sex and betrayal, with a $10,000 money transfer scheduled for the morning. And I thought, why the fuck am I not doing this full time? That was the beginning of my next evolution, from secret to strategist, from mistress to monetized muse. See, these men don't just pay for pussy. They pay for fantasy. They pay for peace, for silence, for that soft touch on the ego that their wives stopped giving them when the mortgage hit. They pay for someone to look them in the eye and say, "You're still powerful." And once you understand that, really understand it, you stop being a liability and start being a luxury. So I built a system. First, I stopped fucking for favors. No more. Oh, he gave me his Amex. Bitch, I created invoices. He wants to see me? There's a deposit. He wants my time on a trip? There's a daily rate. He wants me to delete the video of him crying after I told him I might leave? That's a security fee. You'd be shocked how fast they pay when they know what's at risk. But here's where shit got beautiful. I didn't stop there. I started writing down everything. Every trick. Every message. Every manipulation. I studied my successes like I was building a resume in emotional warfare. I had case studies, bitch. Case studies. Then came the DM. This girl named Alana messaged me out the blue. Said she'd been following me quietly for months. Said she saw the lifestyle, the cars, the bags, the cryptic captions that always seemed to say fuck you in designer font. Said she was tired of struggling. Tired of dating broke dudes and crying in her car after splitting a $60 dinner bill. Said she wanted in. At first, I ignored her. I wasn't in the business of saving anybody. But something about the way she said it, raw, desperate, fire behind the words, made me curious. I met up with her, no makeup, no lashes, just me, coffee in hand and an eyebrow raised. She was pretty. Not stunning, but she had that potential. And more importantly, she had the hunger. The kind of hunger I recognized from when I was fucking for survival, not style. I told her the truth. This ain't about being cute. It's about being dangerous with a smile. You wanna win this game? You gotta look like sin and talk like therapy. You gotta make him feel like a king while plotting like a queen. She blinked, then nodded. Game on. I took her under my wing, first protege. Gave her the breakdown. How to spot a vulnerable husband in a crowded lounge. How to mirror his emotions like you were crafted in his fantasy. How to play the silent card until he breaks the rules. Taught her how to structure gifts as retainer fees. How to manipulate without lies, just well-placed truths. How to cry on cue. How to disappear just long enough to make him panic. Alana got it fast. Her first client? A married music producer with a god complex and a high sex drive. Within a month, he was paying her rent, funding her business, and begging for permission to taste her again. She called me one night, breathless with disbelief. "I did it," she said, voice shaking. I told him I was done and he sent me $10,000 just to talk. I smiled. "Welcome to the fucking empire, baby." Word spread. Quietly, of course. This wasn't something we blasted on social media. This was underground. Elegant. Exclusive. A side bitch syndicate operating in shadows and silk. We didn't fuck for free. We didn't cry over good dick. We flipped influence into income and heartbreak into handbags. I started vetting girls personally. Taught them branding. Taught them how to keep their identities untraceable. How to hold secrets like currency. How to walk into a room and make every married man turn his head and question his whole fucking life. Some failed. Some cracked. But the ones who rose, phew, monsters in heels. This wasn't a sisterhood. It was a corporation. And me, I was the fucking CEO. But like every empire, power attracts problems. And I'll get to those bitches soon. The ones who tried to copy, expose, or tear me down. But this chapter? This one's about the rise. The moment I realized I wasn't just taking from men, I was taking over. It wasn't about sex anymore. It was about strategy, psychology. Emotional manipulation turned into a business model. I turned being the other woman into a six-figure stream, and I never apologized once. Because here's the truth. The world bends for those who aren't afraid to break it first. And me, I bend it in stilettos. Chapter 5, Fuck Love, Stack Power. Let's get one thing straight. Love is a liability. You want to get played? Fall in love. You want to lose focus, sabotage your own bag, and wake up crying over a man who'd fuck your friend in the same room he made promises in? Then go ahead, fall in love. But don't come crying to me when your bank account's empty, your lashes are on the floor, and your self-worth is leaking through your mascara. Because I did that shit once. One time. And I almost lost everything. They say you never forget your first real heartbreak, right? Well, mine was wrapped in caramel skin, gold chains, and a lie so beautiful it made me want to believe in fairy tales again. His name was Elijah. Smooth talker. Investment banker by day, sweet-talking demon by night. He wasn't like the others. He didn't just pay. He studied me. Asked questions no man had ever dared to ask before. What scares you the most? What would you do if nobody was watching? What did they do to you that made you like this? And like a dumb bitch, yeah, I said it, I answered. Because love doesn't come in like a storm. It drips slow. One compliment. One long look. One late night conversation where you say too much, and he says the right things back. Before you know it, you're not charging him for time anymore. You're texting first. You're waiting by the phone. You're wondering if maybe, just maybe, this is different. With Elijah, it started like a game. I met him at a rooftop pool party in Midtown. He was lounging, shirtless, expensive sunglasses, laughing like nothing in the world could touch him. I wasn't even there for work. I was just enjoying the view, sipping on tequila, trying not to get sucked into any married man's fantasy that weekend. But he walked over, smiled like he already knew my secrets, and said, "You look like a woman who burns things down for fun." And that was it. I should have walked away. But I didn't. Instead, I smirked and said, "Only if they deserve it." The first month was fire. Pure lust. Passionate sex in back seats, hotel balconies, bathroom mirrors. We fucked like our lives depended on it. Like the world might end at any second, and we needed to leave our DNA in each other's skin. And even though I told myself it was just sex, just fun, just another temporary pleasure, I knew I was slipping. He wasn't married. He wasn't even in a relationship. But he was dangerous in a way the husbands never were. He had freedom, time, intent, and worst of all, he made me feel. He asked about my childhood. He rubbed my back while I cried about my mother. The woman who raised me on struggle and silence, who loved me the way she'd been loved, hard, cold, distant. He kissed my scars, literal and emotional. He looked at me like I was whole, not broken. And somewhere in all that softness, I forgot who the fuck I was. I stopped charging him. I started canceling on clients just to be with him. I took my walls down, brick by brick, and let him see the vulnerable, messy, unfiltered version of me. The girl beneath the gloss. The bitch behind the armor. And then, he switched up. Subtle at first. Fewer texts. Delayed responses. A missed dinner. A forgotten detail I'd told him 10 times. I felt the shift like a crack in glass. But I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to believe I was being phased out like a seasonal outfit. So I held on tighter. I gave more. That's when he really started to pull away. I knew something was wrong when I woke up one morning and he was gone. No note. No text. No call. Just an empty spot in the bed and a silence so loud it made my teeth hurt. He ghosted me for 4 fucking days. When he finally texted, it was short. "We need to talk." That night, I walked into his high-rise, heart pounding like I was some teenage groupie and not the cold, calculated bitch who used to make grown men cry after nutting. He sat me down. Didn't touch me. Didn't kiss me. Then he said the words that burned through my ribs like fire. "I'm seeing someone else. Someone I want to build something with. I didn't mean to lead you on, but this isn't sustainable." I blinked. Laughed at first. Thought maybe it was a joke. It wasn't. And the worst part? She was basic. Some vanilla ass, brunch on Sundays, wears scarves and watches rom-coms type of bitch. The kind of woman who apologizes when she talks too much. The kind who thinks missionary is edgy and thinks Starbucks is a personality trait. He left me for her. That night I didn't cry. I howled. Screamed into my pillow until my throat felt like sandpaper. I punched a mirror. Bled on the bathroom floor like I'd just been stabbed. And in a way I had. Love is a knife you hand someone and pray they don't twist. He twisted. And when I finally picked myself up, bloodied and broken, I made a vow. Never again. Never again would I give a man power over my joy. Never again would I let my guard down for the promise of love. A promise that's almost always a fucking lie. From that day forward, I sharpened my edges. Hardened my heart. I stopped dating for connection and started fucking for currency. I became colder, smarter, more dangerous. I turned my pain into a plan. I made Elijah a lesson. And every man after him paid tuition. The girls I train now, I teach them this rule first. Don't fall in love. Not with the man. Not with the money. Not with the moments. Everything is temporary. Every orgasm is a transaction. Every kiss is a negotiation. Every sweet word is a script. The moment you believe it's real, you lose. Every time. Love is not your ally. Power is. Power doesn't flinch. Power doesn't apologize. Power doesn't cry on cold bathroom tiles while the man who loved you changes his sheets for someone else. So yeah, maybe I'm heartless now. But heartless bitches don't get played. We play the game. And we fucking win. Chapter 6, The Side Bitch Academy. They say if you teach a man to fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. But if you teach a woman how to finesse a married man out of his income, his power, and his secrets, she'll never need to fish again. She'll own the fucking ocean. After Elijah, after that betrayal lit me on fire and I rose from the ashes in heels and vengeance, I didn't just rebuild. I multiplied. See, it hit me one night while staring at my ceiling at 3 a.m., legs sore from a night of being on top of a hedge fund husband who called me goddess, while crying about how his wife doesn't understand him. I was staring at the chandelier he paid for, wearing a silk robe he bought, sipping on wine he ordered, and I thought, why the fuck am I keeping this all to myself? There are millions of women out here, broke, bitter, brokenhearted, praying for a man to treat them right, or worse, settling for ones who don't. Women wasting their beauty, their wit, their pain-born wisdom on men who wouldn't even pay for a plan B. And here I am, living like a villainess in a romantic thriller, holding the blueprint to a lifestyle nobody talks about but every bitch secretly dreams of. So I said fuck it. I built an academy. No, not some corny-ass boss babe, brand with pink fonts and motivational quotes. This was warfare school for women who were tired of crying, tired of losing, tired of being the joke while some boring wife with two Facebook friends thinks she won because she got a ring. Nah, this was a sanctuary for the silent wolves. The ones who'd been used, dumped, ghosted, humiliated. The ones with broken hearts and unpaid rent. The ones who knew how to survive but were ready to thrive. I didn't want to teach them to be side bitches. I wanted to teach them to be side empires. The first class? 10 women. Found them through whispers. Instagram DMs. One met me in a hotel lobby and slid me her number like I was holding the cure to the disease of being good. Another wrote me a 6-paragraph confession about how she'd just discovered her fiancé was cheating and she wanted to become the woman he should fear. I rented out a penthouse suite. Black walls. Red velvet chairs. Champagne chilled. Candles flickering. No PowerPoint slides. Just eye contact, notebooks, and silence. When they all sat down, I stood in front of them in my heels and lingerie under a blazer and said, "You are no longer victims. You are predators in pearls. Welcome to the Side Bitch Academy." I taught them everything. No filters. No fluff. No apologies. Week 1. The psychology of the husband. I taught them how to read men. Not just what they said, but what they needed said. How to listen for keywords like, "I'm stressed. My wife doesn't get me. I've never met someone like you." How to study his triggers. How to analyze his weaknesses. Because men don't cheat out of strength, they cheat from lack. And lack is leverage. Week 2, identity construction. No real names. No real addresses. No real vulnerability. I taught them how to create alter egos, fantasy versions of themselves that existed for the sole purpose of extraction. These women weren't Jasmine or Courtney. They became Venus, Noir, Siren. They became mystery wrapped in desire. And every move they made was part of the play. Week 3, the art of the soft trap. We don't beg. We don't ask. We imply. I showed them how to be desired without desperation. How to control conversations with silence. How to make a man fall into lust without realizing he's already offered up his bank details. We role-played everything, from first meet to first cash app. I watched these women transform before my eyes. Timid little voices turned into cold-blooded vixens with precision and poise. There was Mel, a barista who used to cry over her ex every night. By week 4, she was dating 2 married doctors, both of whom were paying her tuition and sending her poetry. There was Ari, soft-spoken, too shy to make eye contact. Now, bitch walks like a Bond villain and charges 10 grand just to go on vacation with her client. There was Kenya, divorced mother of 2, used to think she was too old for the game. Turned out, she was a fucking legend. Had 3 executives flying her out on rotation, and an offshore account she didn't even touch yet. They were winning, and I was proud. Not because they were scamming or stealing, but because they'd taken back control of their narratives. See, when society paints you as the villain for being sexy, ruthless, and unwilling to settle, you might as well become the best villain there ever was. And these women graduated with honors. We started expanding. Private chat groups, custom contracts, NDA templates, security plans. We had a legal advisor on retainer, a therapist who specialized in emotional detachment. We created a curriculum, a code, a culture. We weren't just side bitches anymore. We were a fucking syndicate. But success attracts hate. Other women, the loud ones who still believed in Prince Charming, started talking shit, calling us homewreckers, sluts, prostitutes, saying we were poisoning the world with bad female energy. One even tried to leak our names online. I handled that. Let's just say her husband never looked at her the same after I sent him a little video of her calling me a whore, right before I sucked the soul out of him in the back seat of his Tesla. Play stupid games, win expensive consequences. I don't run from war. I fund it, and I fund it with their husband's money. So now, I stand at the head of something bigger than I ever imagined. Not just a movement, a revolution. We aren't sorry. We aren't soft. We aren't sitting in silence while mediocre men destroy their wives and turn us into the scapegoats. We're loud in private, powerful in shadows, and rich off pain that we flipped into profit. We are the Side Bitch Academy. And our motto, feel nothing, take everything. Chapter 7, Crown Me Queen of Wreckage. They say every empire eventually falls, but they never said what happens when the Empress sets it on fire herself. Let me tell you a secret. Power doesn't come from how many men you fuck, how many bags you own, or how many women call you queen in your comments. Power comes from what you're willing to lose and still walk away smiling, lip gloss poppin', heart iced over, crown still tilted like it was made to fit chaos. I didn't just build this world to survive. I built it to conquer. But even the strongest bitch meets a mirror eventually. The kind that doesn't reflect her lashes, her walk, or her secrets. The kind that shows you everything you've broken to get here. Every woman you left behind, every man you manipulated, every emotion you buried so deep you forgot it even had a name. And when that mirror came for me, it didn't whisper. It screamed. It all started with him. Senator Devereaux. Married. Black royalty. 47. Salt and pepper beard that made you want to sin on Sundays and dare God to forgive you. Smooth voice, clean hands, dirty soul. He wasn't just a man, he was a machine. Calculated. Precise. Untouchable. The kind of politician that made people kneel with their eyes open. The moment I saw him on that news segment, giving a speech about protecting family values, I laughed so hard I nearly spilled my wine. Because I already knew the taste of his sins. And I wanted more. I knew going after him wasn't just about the money. It wasn't even about the sex, though trust me, I had him moaning like a sinner at a revival. No, this one was about legacy. About war. About showing the world that even kings get dethroned when they kneel to the right kind of bitch. It started small. A DM from a burner. A fake profile, conservative, quiet, intriguing. I played the game like it was the first time I ever picked up the controller. And he fell hard. Told me I had integrity in my eyes. Told me I made him feel like a man outside the cameras and political dinners. I made him feel free. And when you make a man feel free, he pays with his freedom. First it was cash. Then gifts. Then private jets. Then secrets. He told me everything. His wife's Xanax addiction. His fake charity funds. The hush money he paid to a young boy whose sister he allegedly harassed at a campaign event in 2013. I had it all. Recorded. Archived. Safe. I could have ended him right then. But queens don't end wars in chapter one. We dragged the story out until the entire kingdom collapses at our feet. I went deeper. Moved into his soul like I owned it. Made him beg for my presence. Had him renting penthouses he never stepped foot in just to keep me close. He was addicted. Obsessed. Whispering about leaving his wife, about rewriting his whole narrative for me. Please. I've seen that movie. Spoiler alert, they never leave. But he was too far gone to notice, I wasn't asking him to. I was building something. Quietly. Slowly. With patience only women like me possess. Until his wife, Vivian, entered the chat. Vivian was everything society said a political wife should be. Classy. Silent. Loyal. Standing next to him like a ghost in a $3,000 gown. But beneath those pearls? Fire. Rage. A rage I knew very fucking well. I expected her to fall apart when she found out. But she didn't. She showed up. Not screaming. Not crying. She sent me a text. Simple. We should talk, woman to woman, before we both lose everything. I laughed, but I met her, because something in me, some sick part of my twisted soul, wanted to see her eyes when I told her how often I made her husband call me queen. We sat across from each other in a silent cafe. She sipped her tea. I wore red. She wore white. The whole thing felt biblical. And then she said something I'll never forget. You think you're the first? I blinked. She smiled. He's been fucking ghosts since we said I do. You're just the first one who brought a torch. Burn it down. I'm already cold. That was the moment I realized. Vivian wasn't a victim. She was the original villain. And for the first time in years, I met a woman who didn't flinch. Didn't cry. Didn't break. She just watched. And I knew right then, this wasn't about him anymore. This was about me and her. Two queens. One empire. One match. And I lit it. I leaked the receipts. Anonymous drop. Videos. Audio. Financial trails. Press releases were chaos. News outlets couldn't keep up. Senator Devereaux's empire fell like dominoes dipped in gasoline. The scandal splashed across every screen in America. His wife filed for divorce. His donors vanished. He cried during a public apology. The same mouth that once whispered my name with reverence. He was done. And me? I went silent. Changed numbers. Deleted accounts. Moved cities. I didn't need credit for the wreckage. Real queens don't need applause, just results. But let me tell you the part that fucked me up. Vivian sent me flowers. No card. Just black roses and a bottle of champagne. She won. So did I. We both walked away with everything. Because sometimes two women don't fight over the man. They just fight to see who's willing to destroy him better. And I left the crown on the bed, dripping with his tears, and walked away with the keys to the kingdom. I didn't need to stay. I was already immortal. So now, as I write the final page of this manifesto, let me say this. I am not a role model. I am not here to teach morality, love, or tradition. I am here to show you what happens when a woman stops waiting to be chosen and starts choosing herself. At any cost. I've loved. I've lost. I've lied. I've stolen. I've bled. But I never ever bowed. And now, I wear a crown carved from confessions, betrayal, and fucking brilliance. So if you're reading this and still judging me, good. That means you're still sleeping. But for the rest of you, the ones ready to wake up, pick up your power, and flip your pain into a paycheck? Class dismissed. Your new life starts now. Signed, The Queen of Wreckage.